Today is Wednesday, September 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the White House delivers a major change to U.S. immigration policy.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
Forecasters are watching what's predicted to be a monster hurricane.
Irma certainly is maintaining its strength, a very strong, a dangerous Category 5 hurricane right now.
Also ahead, royal watchers have something new to be excited about. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, demonstrators took to the streets Tuesday in Washington, D.C. and other U.S. cities to express their opposition to what was then the impending decision to end a program that protected nearly 800,000 young undocumented immigrants from deportation and allowed them to work and study in the U.S. President Donald Trump approved the decision but sent Attorney General Jeff Sessions before news cameras Tuesday to announce the controversial policy change. Demonstrators opposed to the administration's decision massed in Washington and other cities beforehand, but there were no confrontations.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
President Trump was asked by reporters Tuesday about his past statements about his intention to, quote, treat those young immigrants, also known as dreamers, who entered the U.S. as young children with heart.
Well, I have a great heart for the folks we're talking about, a great love for them. And people think in terms of children, but they're really young adults. I have a love for these people, and hopefully now Congress will be able to help them and do it properly. And I can tell you, in speaking to members of Congress, they want to be able to do something and do it right.
While the future status of the hundreds of thousands of young foreign-born students and workers is unclear for now, since they are no longer protected from summary deportation by the DACA program, Congress will have 6 months to act if it wants to continue to allow them to remain in the U.S. The decision has been met with anger on both sides of the political aisle. Here's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
The reality of the situation is that these children basically have no place to go other than America. And here's the good news for America. You should want them to stay. They're great kids. They're working. They're productive.
Well, joining me now to discuss this further is Los Angeles-based immigration attorney Jessica Chen. Thank you for being with us. So what was your reaction to Tuesday's decision?
It's a very unfortunate decision by the Trump administration. As President Obama stated, it's cruel and self-defeating to target these young people. I think that a lot of people are going to be hurt by this, not just the 800,000 DACA recipients, but our communities, our economy, you know, businesses, and even our military, where thousands of DACA recipients currently serve.
So they are allowed to join the military?
Yes.
So what happens to those 800,000 young people whose lives are now on the line? What happens to them?
Well, for now, those who have DACA status will be able to stay until it expires. For those who have it expiring before March 5th, 2018, they can renew it. After that, I think the majority of Americans on both sides of the aisle will continue to stand behind them. But at this point, it's a wait and watch what Congress will do. DACA was originally intended to be a stopgap for Congress to take more permanent action. And hopefully this will be that push for Congress to act decisively to their benefit.
One of the things that Attorney General Jeff Sessions said was that these people are taking jobs away from Americans. Is that accurate? Are they? And if so, how many jobs are they taking away?
That is completely unacceptable that he said that, you know, that Attorney General Sessions took this opportunity to accuse dreamers of stealing jobs and threatening American culture. It's quite the opposite. Many of these dreamers with DACA were able to start their own businesses, creating jobs for American workers. You know, they pay billions in taxes. They're not eligible for welfare benefits or subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. You know, they are benefiting the American economy.
So what you're saying is it's quite the contrary to taking jobs away, but they're actually benefiting?
Yeah, I mean, we have clients that have created small businesses here in Los Angeles, bookkeeping service, restaurants, and, you know, they're hiring American workers, paying taxes to the city and to the federal government. So I only see that as a benefit.
One of the other statements made by both the Attorney General and the President was that President Obama's action of creating this rule was illegal. In your view, as an immigration attorney and your familiarity with the law, where do you stand with this? Because I know there are differing views on this.
So actually, back in August, there were 105 immigration law professors that wrote an open letter to the White House explaining the legal basis for DACA, even outlining its clear constitutional basis for the program and for offering prosecutorial discretion in this case.
What were some of the arguments?
So in the open letter, they refer to Article 2, Section 3, the Take Care Clause of the Constitution that allows the president to target some immigration cases for removal and to use prosecutorial discretion favorably in others.
So what happens if Congress does not take action in 6 months from now or within 6 months?
A matter of just waiting and watching to see what will happen. We're hoping that Congress will take action decisively, but we're hoping that communities will put pressure on their senators and representatives to take action.
Have you had a lot of clients reaching out to you concerned?
Yes, of course. We've had a lot of clients calling today concerned about, you know, what's going to happen next and what's going to happen with their status. We're doing our best to assure them that, you know, we will continue to stand behind them and do what we can throughout this process. Unfortunately, there's no clear answer on what is next. All we can provide is assurance that we will fight for them.
All right. Los Angeles-based immigration attorney Jessica Chen, we appreciate your perspective. And joining me now for the latest on social media is Andrew Palchevsky. I imagine there has been a lot of talk about this decision on the status of young immigrants.
It has been. Ever since that announcement was made on Tuesday, it's really been a top trending topic in the U.S. and around the world. And we saw a lot of people using social media right after this decision was announced to stage protests and walkouts. We saw some stunning aerial photos that were up on social media of schools just emptying out in the middle of cities as students walked out in protest of this decision. And we've seen videos from on the ground at protests in New York and here in D.C. Near the White House. So we're seeing social media being used in that regard. We're also seeing social media being used as a way to galvanize and provide information to these dreamers, to give them information about what this decision means for them, what happens in the next 6 months, what they have to do to make sure that they are safe. We're also seeing reaction from former President Obama. He was, of course, the person who enacted this plan, and he issued a very lengthy Facebook post in which he wrote in part that immigration can be a controversial topic, but generally there's goodwill and legitimate disagreements towards trying to secure our borders. However, he said that was not the action that the White House took today, referring to that action on Tuesday. And he goes on to say that the action is contrary to our spirit and to our common sense. Very strong words from President Obama. Ever since he posted that on Tuesday afternoon, it has received hundreds of thousands of shares and likes and quite a lot of heated comments in the comment section there on Facebook. A lot of debates back and forth about the merits of this program and the decision on Tuesday to rescind it.
Wow. Yeah. Well, this is definitely a conversation that will continue for sure on social media and elsewhere. Anything else that's trending and people are talking about?
The other big story trending here in the U.S. is, of course, Hurricane Irma churning towards the Caribbean and the United States. And there was a term trending that I saw called Zello, and I wasn't sure exactly what this was, and I clicked on it, and it relates to the hurricane in this way. It's an app created in the state of Texas that allows people to use their phones as walkie-talkies. Now, during Hurricane Harvey, people used the Zello app to communicate with rescuers when the phone lines were jammed or they couldn't get any social media posts to go through. Well, in preparation for Hurricane Irma, people have read the articles about this app being used, and they are downloading it in droves. In fact, there was one Facebook page in Puerto Rico that's trying to prepare for the hurricane as it gets close to that island, where people saw this mentioned and have begun downloading it by the thousands. Now, this made it a trending topic on social media, but it also had a little bit of back and forth around it because, as people are noting, you need internet access to use this. And if the internet access is not there, if the power lines are down, you may not be able to use this app, but people at least are trying to prepare ahead of time, trying to get this app so that they can communicate if the power goes out or if the phone lines do go down. It's a trend we've been seeing a lot in the past few weeks with Hurricane Harvey, but really it's been around since social media has been around. People have used social media to communicate in times of crisis, and so this is no different. It's just an evolution of that, and this Zello app is the way that people are doing it. I wouldn't be surprised to see in the coming week or two, as Irma gets closer to the Caribbean and the U.S., if we see other people using social media in different ways, other developments, other apps that percolate because of the storm as people try to communicate.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. And as he mentioned just now, the Caribbean and South Florida are in the path of Hurricane Irma, which forecasters are calling a potentially catastrophic Category 5 hurricane. States of emergency have already been called for Puerto Rico and Florida, where Governor Rick Scott is urging residents to prepare.
We are preparing for Irma to directly impact our state, and while it is still too early to tell exactly where the storm will hit, it is incredibly important that all Floridians keep a close eye on this incredibly dangerous storm. Do not sit and wait to prepare. Get prepared now.
Well, Irma is moving toward the, actually, forecasters say it is moving with the strongest winds ever recorded in an Atlantic storm. Experts are saying it's nothing to take lightly. And joining me now for an update is AccuWeather senior meteorologist Carl Erickson. So what can you tell us about the current status of this storm?
Irma certainly is maintaining its strength, a very strong, dangerous Category 5 hurricane right now. Latest report here this evening still has maximum sustained winds, 185 miles per hour, even some higher gusts. Moving off to the west here, almost due west, and it's just east of Antigua, about 85 miles here, and about 90 miles east-southeast of Barbuda. They're moving off to the west at 15. It's going to skirt by the Leeward Islands here tonight into tomorrow morning.
Is it supposed to make landfall any place in particular where you're expecting some pretty bad, pretty intense damage?
We'll become very, very close to those northern Leeward Islands, the U.S. Virgin Islands. It may go over Barbuda and Antigua. They come very close. The islands are very small, so it may just brush by them. But the main impact, they'll pretty much get the full brunt of the hurricane with some of the most powerful winds, certainly destructive, damaging winds, and the heavy rainfall. So expecting a lot of damage across those islands overnight tonight and into the early morning hours. Then beyond that, it looks like it will brush just to the north of Puerto Rico late in the day on Wednesday into Wednesday night, and probably just north of Hispaniola as it goes through the day on Thursday.
Is this the type of storm that would dump significant amounts of rainfall and cause a lot of flooding?
Any hurricane or any tropical storm, even just a tropical storm, can produce a tremendous amount of rainfall. Try to find some sort of good news with this system is, unlike Harvey, we expect Hurricane Irma here to continue to move along, even as it heads toward the United States. And still a lot of questions about exactly where the track will be across the lower 48. But one thing that does seem to be rather with the consensus of the modeling is we don't see this stalling out like Harvey did over Texas. So while it can still produce a lot of rain, instead of 30, 40, 50 inches of rain like we saw in Texas, we'll see rainfall amounts more like in that 8 to 12, maybe locally into the 16, maybe as high as 20-inch range. But as far as like 40 or 50, mm-hmm. that does not appear to be in the cards here.
Right, because part of that problem was that it was just literally just sitting there and not moving. And one's moving.
We expect Irma to continue to move along.
Okay, so as of right now, can you project whether it will hit the mainland of the U.S., or is it still too early?
Well, it's certainly looking more and more likely than it did a few days ago. That we had a lot of uncertainty, models a little bit more in consensus. There's still a little bit of outline of exactly where it's going to go, but it looks like Florida has become more of a threat here over the past couple of days. Mm-hmm. I think we should go up to the Mid-Atlantic, New England. Those areas look less and less likely that they will see a direct landfall from Irma. We're kind of focusing in on Florida right now. The question is, does it kind of skirt by extreme southern Florida or even pass through the Keys and into the eastern Gulf of Mexico, or does it try to come up the east coast of Florida? Models still kind of spread out across that area, but we're kind of honing in on Florida right now, unfortunately. Then what happens beyond Florida? I think on the current track and forecast path right now, Florida, southern Florida, can start to see the weather begin to deteriorate as early as late Saturday night into early Sunday morning, with the worst of it Sunday into Sunday night, early Monday. Then beyond that, it looks like the storm either moves up the peninsula or just offshore. If it stays offshore, it can maintain its strength. The Carolinas have to be on guard for some heavy rain and some damaging winds up through Georgia. And then we have to be concerned about the Appalachians as we go into early next week.
So obviously, later toward the weekend and early next week, we'll have a better idea of what it's going to do as far as where it might go beyond
Correct.
That.
Correct. But if I were living in Florida or anywhere along the southeast coast, I certainly would want to be taking preparations, which we should anyway this time of the year, being we're at the peak of hurricane season, have that action plan in place, have everything you need to be prepared. And I believe some places around Miami, southern Florida, have already begun some evacuations of at least the tourists, the non-local people, already beginning Wednesday morning. So I think we are kind of honing in more in on Florida and the southeast coast here later in the weekend into early next week for a potential landfall.
That's AccuWeather senior meteorologist Carl Erickson. Well, meanwhile, much of Houston is cleaning up from the devastation caused by Hurricane Harvey and the flooding that followed. The rebuilding is just beginning, and the financial impact is being felt by both flood victims and those who did not get water into their homes. Elizabeth Lee explains from Houston.
Valerie Pham just bought this house and had lived in it for only 2 months before Hurricane Harvey hit Houston.
My closest to you in some boxes and it's all like wet and damaged and everything. We just spent like $100 to wash them all yesterday.
Pham does not have flood insurance and is desperate to get financial help. She lost everything in the flood.
You see me on the wall right here.
While flood victims are the ones who are hardest hit by Hurricane Harvey, Houstonians who did not get water in their homes, who are small business owners, are also feeling the effects in the aftermath of the storm.
It's been pretty much a ghost town.
Doug Noe's seafood restaurant is open for business, but it's been slow.
Eating out is leisure, so I don't think leisure is the word for right now.
Separated by a wall, the business next door is a convenience store and gas station managed by Sam Ali. For now, though, there is no gas.
Gas is a big part of the convenience stores. Without gas, we don't run the store inside and the people come for the, like, buy grocery or stuff like that.
There's also a shortage of basic groceries such as milk and water here.
Everything, transportation is be like stuck. Right now, no deliver anything else on our store. At least like 1 week, everybody's stuck. They don't have some warehouses of like flooding.
One of Ali's regular customers, Neftali Esperanza, is also feeling the financial effects of the storm.
I didn't have work for 5 days. With no work, I'm not making any money.
Esperanza, who has two young daughters at home, says he is finally starting to get a little bit of work. It will be a while before these small business owners know the extent of the financial impact of the hurricane.
You can't really know. Hopefully it's not too bad.
As Pham cleans up her home and looks for financial assistance, she tries to be optimistic.
Sad, of course, but no matter what, I still have to try harder and rebuild everything and move on.
And hope that no more hurricanes come to Houston this year. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Beyonce and Barbara Streisand will headline a Harvey relief telethon. Egypt will host war games with the U.S. after an 8-year hiatus. China and Russia oppose tougher North Korea sanctions. And halibut fishing contests are drawing thousands to Alaska. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, North Korea's nuclear weapons program is the most serious threat the world currently faces, according to the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who declared on Tuesday that confrontational rhetoric may actually lead to unintended consequences.
Let us promote the dialogue and communication necessary to avoid miscalculation and misunderstanding.
2 days after its latest atomic test, North Korea declared itself a full-fledged nuclear power.
The solution must be political. The potential consequences of military action are too horrific.
U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley told the Security Council on Monday that there's really no time left to wait.
Only the strongest sanctions will enable us to resolve this problem through diplomacy. We have kicked the can down the road long enough. There is no more road left.
President Trump has vowed to stop all U.S. trade with any country doing business with North Korea. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, medieval costumes, a bright pink Cinderella dress, and a few dozen military-like helmets, one of the oldest theaters in Washington, D.C., the Arena Stage, emptied the contents of its closets and put decades' worth of costumes up for sale. VOA's Lijia Bakalet and Kyoshu Zhao discovered which in-demand costumes sold for only a few dollars in this report, narrated by Joy Wagner.
The line was long and wrapped around the entire perimeter of Arena Stage. The early bird gets the worm, and in this case, the best costume. Lola found what she needed in just a few minutes.
This is a great costume sale where you can pick up things like this. These are angel wings. They must have taken, I don't know, maybe hundreds of hours to make, and I picked them up for $30.
She also spotted a turquoise boa, a governess's apron, and quite an ordinary jacket, which she's going to wear with jeans. While Lola was looking for appropriate garb for her art studio, most buyers were hunting for the best Halloween costumes.
People love Halloween, so this is an opportunity to be able to come in and get your Halloween costumes.
Teenager Claire won't have anything to do with traditional Halloween costumes. Instead, she gravitated towards a fake axe, a bloody robe, and a leather apron. She is convinced she will have the most unique costume this Halloween.
This is an apron. And I think this is to go under it.
Some bloody.
I think it's to be like a butcher or an evil butcher, something like that. Princesses are overrated.
The prices varied from $2 to $200. Some of the costumes had designer labels.
For example, a nice pair of pants that are Gucci. They are not priced, so I think these are $4 under the price tag.
Real Dolce & Gabbana.
Real Dolce & Gabbana.
This sale only takes place every decade. Arena Stage's artistic director said the sale allows the theater to make room for new costumes, thus letting the public benefit from the old costumes that aren't used anymore.
Arena Stage has been a theater for 68 years. We have 68 years worth of costumes. So you can imagine how much that is. There are 25 different racks in the other room. There are huge boxes of wigs. There's probably 100 hats. There are several hundred shoes. I mean, it's pretty remarkable.
And you'll always know the origin of the costume. There's always a tag on what you buy with the name of the play in which the costume was worn. The sales were astonishing. Lots of people showed up, and Arena Stage is still calculating its profit from the sale. Lesia Bakaletz, Kai Shu Zhao, VOA News, Washington.
And now for more entertainment news, we're joined by Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella. So, Nicole, the fascination with the British royal family never ends, and now they've got something else to be excited about regarding Kate Middleton.
the Duchess is pregnant again. She and William announced on Monday via an official statement from the palace that they are expecting their third child together. It is being speculated that Kate is only about 3 months along. With her last two pregnancies, she and William have announced all three pregnancies early because she suffers from very severe morning sickness that leaves her completely on bed rest, and she is under the care at the palace. She had to cancel last minute an engagement yesterday, which is why they have decided to announce. So that is very exciting news. I hope that she's feeling okay.
I know. That's rough. That's devotion to having a child when you go through that, because it's not easy for sure. And so we've got some Madonna news.
Madonna surprised her fans over the weekend and announced that she has actually left. She previously lived in New York. She had a residence in New York.
Right.
She is now living in Portugal.
Really?
And to top that off, she's working on some new music, so that should be exciting for her fans. She did just do her Crazy World tour, last year, the year before. So she's taken a little bit of a break, and now she's going to make a fresh start back in the music world. And she also is directing a new film called Love.
That was Rare.us content editor Nicole Muscella. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Lebanon has the highest proportion of cultivable land in the Arab world. Indeed, the region has a long history of agricultural activity. There is evidence that as far back as 8,000 years ago, people living in today's Lebanon cultivated fruit trees, and around 5,000 years ago were some of the first to produce wine. Agriculture is still an important sector of Lebanon's economy, but for decades now, much arable land there has been inaccessible due to heavy contamination with landmines and unexploded ordnance. Between 1975 and 1990, Lebanon was racked by a civil war that also saw 12 years of occupation of portions of its territory by its southern neighbor, Israel. Since 1975, landmines and unexploded ordnance have killed more than 900 people and injured thousands. People in many parts of Lebanon face daily dangers from these deadly hazards, wrote Assistant Program Manager for the Middle East in the Office of Weapons Removal and Abatement in the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs, Patrick Shea, in a recent blog post. The United States has long been committed to promoting peace and security in Lebanon and has invested more than $60 million in assistance to safely clear unexploded munitions, save lives through risk education and outreach, and support the Lebanese Mine Action Center to receive advanced training. By supporting the work of implementing partners like Mines Advisory Group and coordinating with other donors through mechanisms such as the Mine Action Support Group, writes Mr. Shea, the United States is not only making a difference in the lives of ordinary Lebanese, but is contributing to international security by removing explosive material that could fall into the hands of extremists or terrorists.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.